The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost. Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. On today's show, we are going to talk about an introductory lesson in variable annuities. So this is just an intro. Variable annuities can get pretty complicated in their makeup and their pros and cons, if you will. But we're just going to do a little intro to, or variable annuities 101, if you will. So my name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Salnier. This is the EDU version of the Retirement and IRA Show. So we're going to get into one topic in a little more detail than we would on our Q&A show. If you stumbled across this show directly haven't seen our Q&A show, that's where we're going to address specific questions that are either sent into us via email from listeners or even live phone calls at times from listeners, where we will answer questions on practically any retirement-related topic. Answer a lot of Social Security questions that way, just because that's a hot topic in retirement that people seem to be confused about. But these EDU shows are meant to cover one particular topic in a little more detail than we can usually get into in the Q&A show. So, Jim, are you ready to go with your microphone on? And
microphone is on.
Every detail about variable annuities that people might want to know?
Well, this came from an emailer, so... Well, I'm gonna.
It's fine. We don't exclude email questions on the EDU show, but
no,
we usually
do not
dedicate the show just to one specific topic.
And we
topic.
What I simply want our listeners to know, this is going to be Variable Annuities 101. I'm not going to get too deep into the weeds on this, but I hope to answer this guy's general question. And it begins, I recently found your shows on the podcast, and I have been listening to some of them ever since. I really enjoy listening. They are very entertaining and informative. And Jim really does look like George Clooney.
There it is again. Yep. The random George Clooney comments.
I don't know why
people
put that in here.
I'm pretty sure you are obsessed with George Clooney, just so you know.
Does he know? I got a man crush on him.
Apparently.
Yeah. Okay. I think they do make a lot of sense. Oh, excuse me. Let me back up. I like your idea of risk capacity and your bucketing strategy. I think they do make a lot of sense, and he's not talking about variable annuities yet, folks. He's talking about the bucketing. With bucket one, filled with cash for the first 2 to 5 years. Bucket two, perhaps with a CD ladder or traditional fixed annuity. And the last 8 to 10 years of bucket three, filled with investments. And I understand my bucket four will be Social Security, pension, and income annuities. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in learning, though, more about variable annuities. I have searched your podcast for information on them and could not find anything. There's a reason why.
Not much on there.
We haven't done variable annuities. Can you go over variable annuities on your show? Can you tell us what you think of them? And how you see this type of annuity fitting into the bucketing plan. Thank you.
I'm glad somebody finally brought it up. Kind of forced us to talk about it a little bit.
A little bit, yes. So I want to, again, put this, folks, at the 30,000-foot level, Variable Annuities 101. And I will say, in all fairness, I'm not a fan of variable annuities anymore.
Anymore or in general? I mean, were you at one
at
time
one
a fan?
At one point, I hated them when I got out of Boston University. Then I started liking them during what I call the great variable annuity income wars. That was around 2003 through 2008.
That's when they had very competitive income or withdrawal benefits, correct?
We'll talk about that. Very, very competitive. You can't get any of these annuities anymore. Some insurance companies are trying to entice buyers of those annuities that had really good lifetime income guarantees to actually cash them in earlier even. When those went away, so that brief window, I just don't like variable annuities anymore. Now, they are the most common annuity that is sold.
Really?
Yeah. More variable annuities are sold than any others.
Not in this office.
Not in this office. Absolutely not. They are most likely, although I have never asked him personally, the annuity that Ken Fisher is referencing when he says, I hate annuities and so should you. Because if Ken Fisher was being honest and was talking about income annuities for retirees, and if Ken Fisher was really a financial planner and not just an investment person, I think he would admit there is a place for those annuities in a sound retirement plan.
I don't think he'd admit it publicly.
No.
But maybe if you got him...
Lick it up.
In the corner at the company party when he thought he was off the record. But I won't speak for him. I do not know for sure. But
no.
A lot of his complaints or criticisms that he applies to the word annuities can clearly be, you can see exaggerated versions of this in the variable annuity market.
Absolutely.
Much more so than in fixed income or SPIA annuities.
Single premium immediate annuities. Yeah. The types of annuities that Chris and I like. So variable annuities I am not a fan of. I will try to keep my biases aside and approach this unbiased, but I feel our listeners need to know. Offhand, I am not a fan. And if you are being sold a variable annuity, you might want to really be sure of it. The person offering it to you is probably very sure that it fits your need. But you have to be sure. And if you're buying it because of potential income, you would still want to compare that variable annuity to a traditional income annuity to really see what offers the best income, dollar for dollar. But before we get into the income, potential income benefits, how does a variable annuity work, or what is a variable annuity? A variable annuity is an annuity. It's a deferred annuity. So that means the income is generally not received immediately upon purchase. And the income payments, if the annuity is annuitized, not if it has an income benefit, a rider, in other words, they go by the acronym GMWB, Guaranteed Minimum Withdrawal Benefits, or GMIB, Guaranteed Minimum Income Benefits. We're not talking about those types of income benefits. I'm talking about the actual annuitization of a variable annuity. When you tell the insurance company, keep the money, just give me income. Variable annuitization, unlike the SPIA that Chris mentioned, single premium immediate annuity, variable annuitization is exactly that, Chris, variable. Your income payments could go up 1 year, could go down the next year. They could keep going down, they could keep going up. There is no surety in the payments of a traditional variable annuity. Very few variable annuities are ever annuitized, because the payments are generally significantly lower than what you can get from a traditional income annuity. And if you're going to give up access to your money, you might as well get more steady guaranteed income than less variable income, with the potential for more, but the potential for a loss. And most people who are annuitizing, Chris, want the guaranteed income. Mm-hmm. And when they hear a variable annuity payment isn't guaranteed, they're saying, well, what the hell good is that to me? if my payments can go down. I don't want them to go down. So very few people actually buy a variable annuity and annuitize it. So what do they do with it? Well, it's a deferred annuity. So when you buy a deferred annuity, you are deferring the income. Now, Chris mentioned a single premium immediate annuity before. Those annuities immediately pay out the income. They are an immediate annuity. But a variable annuity mostly falls into the realm of what are known as deferred annuities. You're going to open it, you're going to hold it, and you're going to defer the income. But as I said, because of the way variable annuity payments happen, if you annuitize it, in other words, give up access to the money, very few contracts ever are annuitized. Instead, most people just hold on to them. And that was one of the issues I had with them when I first got out of Boston University. They didn't do anything. You would open this annuity, put money into it, and defer income. You never were going to annuitize it anyways if you did. Very few people did annuitize it. And the money was not guaranteed. It could go up, it could go down. But the cost of the annuity was quite high. We're going to get into costs in a second.
Well, maybe, can you give a, I know it's hard to do it in 10 words or less, but maybe in a 30 words or less general description of a variable annuity, exactly what it is.
It is an insurance product, first and foremost, folks. Thanks, Chris. I should have began with that. It is not an investment, even though it is often spoken about by the people selling them as an investment. It is first and foremost an insurance product. In fact, to sell a variable annuity, you must be insurance licensed because it's an insurance product, and you have to be securities licensed because it's an investment. Because your principal can go up or down and you can close the annuity and receive less than what you put in, and because the performance of the annuity is open to the variability of what are known as sub-accounts. A lot of people think they're mutual funds. They look like a mutual fund. They sometimes have the same name as a retail mutual fund, but the investments inside a variable annuity are called sub-accounts, and they operate in a similar fashion to mutual funds, may have the exact same manager of the retail mutual fund, but they'll have a different fee structure, and they're not mutual funds. They're separate accounts. But because these accounts can go up or down, they're called variable annuities. The money you put into a deferred annuity, the intent is to defer the income. And if the income if the annuity balance grows, when you turn it into income in the future, there will hopefully be more money in the annuity than when you bought it. So you will get more income. That's the theory when you annuitize it. But again, as I said, and I'm not going to get into variable annuitization. Maybe I'll do that on another show. Few people will annuitize a variable annuity, but let's just again play devil's advocate. And your intent is to put money in an annuity product, let it grow, and then annuitize it.
And maybe hope it grows.
Hope it grows
is a better word.
I wouldn't use a variable annuity for that. I would invest the money on my own and then decide in the future if I want to buy an income annuity with it or not. But that's a whole other story. So a variable annuity, first and foremost, is an insurance product with an investment component. Your money, and this I see constantly, your money, folks, is not protected. It is not guaranteed. So many times people say they bought the variable annuity because they didn't want any more investment risk. That is the wrong annuity to buy, because your actual account balance is invested in these sub-accounts that look and sound like a mutual fund, but they're slightly different. But they can go up, they can go down. So your money is not protected. Now, some variable annuities will have a fixed or guaranteed account within your investment choices. And that account might be a money market or a fixed account where the insurance company will give you a certain amount of interest. That money is technically guaranteed by the insurance company, and you would not be exposed to the quote-unquote variability, Chris, of the market. So it is possible to buy a variable annuity, but direct your premiums that you put into the variable annuity into a very safe and secure option inside the variable annuity.
So one of the sub-accounts choose a safer than compared to riskier choice, and you could reduce the variability of this variable annuity balance.
But it defeats the purpose of buying a variable annuity.
If that's your goal, I'm not sure why you would go down the path of a variable annuity.
Right. So originally, variable annuities were created by TIA Cref. They came out with the first one in the 50s, I think 1953. And since then, they've grown in popularity. And the theory was, rather than, because before variable annuities came out, you would open up a deferred annuity to buy income later, and you would put it inside this deferred annuity, and the insurance company would pay you a set amount of interest while you were deferring it. And while the money was being deferred inside the deferred annuity, you did not have to pay taxes on it. So it was a really unique concept. I'm going to open up an account. Now I'm going back to the 1950s, folks. So you could open up an account, and fixed annuities were around, goodness, since the turn of the century, not even the 1950s. So you could put money, Chris, in an account. The insurance company would guarantee a certain rate of return. The account would grow and earn interest, but it wouldn't be subject to income taxes until you turned the income guarantee on. Then some of the income would be subject to taxes, so you could defer taxes. So an annuity, a deferred income annuity, accomplished two things. It allowed you to create a guaranteed income stream in the future, which Chris and I are huge fans of. We like lifetime guaranteed income. But it would allow you to do so in a tax advantage manner. Remember, this is before IRAs came out. Mm-hmm. And the ability for you at the individual level to just go open one of these tax advantaged accounts. Mm-hmm. So annuities were the king of the pack. Mm-hmm. So in the 1950s, and I believe it was 53, TIA Cref comes out with the idea of a variable annuity. It was approved by the IRS, and it operated on the same concept. You were going to put money into an account, let it grow tax deferred, which at the time was the only option for you at the individual level. There was no IRAs. There was no individual retirement accounts. So you would have to open an annuity. Well, the problem with fixed annuities is they weren't invested and they didn't have the potential to earn more than a lower fixed guaranteed rate. Right.
So this tax advantage, if you will, that made them attractive. But when they were being sold by the insurance industry, competing with stockbrokers out there trying to convince people to buy stocks, the potential upside was more romantic on the stock sale than on the insurance sale. And thus, TIA Cref comes out with
the variable annuity. So the variable annuity offered something your broker couldn't sell you back then,
right?
Tax deferral.
Yep.
The broker, you'd have to pay taxes on everything. So the variable annuity comes out and says, hey, we're not going to put any income guarantees on this. We're not going to put any growth guarantees on this, but we're going to let you buy investments inside the annuity rather than paying a fixed rate. We're going to pay a variable rate based on what your investments would earn. The IRS approved it, and the variable annuity was born, and then a whole cottage industry sprouted out by every insurance company offering them. Remember, though, folks, the premise was the same. The premise was you're going to put money in, it's going to grow tax deferred, and you won't be taxed until income comes out when you annuitize it and begin taking income out. Then you would start paying the taxes. The government did not have any required minimum distributions on them. Hell, RMDs didn't exist yet because IRAs didn't exist yet. So there were no rules of having to take your money out. And the products at first gained a lot of following and a lot of fanfare that you could put money in this annuity. It would grow tax deferred and you wouldn't be taxed until you took the money out in retirement. And back then they were taxed not on a last in, last out called LIFO tax structure. In other words, the last money into the, LIFO, last in, first out. They weren't taxed that way. They were taxed on what is called FIFO, first in, first out. What does that mean in English? The first dollars to be taken out of the variable annuity back then were the dollars you put in. So the insurance agents were saying, look, not only that, you can put this $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 in. Remember, we're talking $1950 here, folks. You can put this money in. It grows. And then when it grows enough, you put 10 in and it grows to 10. You can take your 10 back out, Chris, tax-free. Because it's FIFO accounting, first in, first out. First dollars in were the $10,000. First dollars out are your $10,000. Mm-hmm. And then you can just leave the growth in there. Let the growth continue to grow. When you stop working, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. And you can start taking it out over a lifetime stream of income. And if you live long enough and get all your money back, the insurance company is going to keep paying you. Sounds pretty damn good.
And on paper, it looks glorious.
And back
in that
then,
way.
They were pretty good because you had nothing else option.
Right. And in this, just to clarify a couple quick things, it was 1952. So Jim's memory is actually pretty darn good on this. It was 1952. And this is actually where the CREF part of TIAA CREF comes in.
Oh, CREF didn't
exist
yet? It
was TIAA. The CREF stands for College Retirement Equities Fund. And that was the first variable annuity. The CREF part.
Okay.
And now they're now the largest provider of variable annuities, but there was just TIAA before, the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association. So it was designed for teachers. Then the CREF part gets added simply because of the creation of these variable annuity products.
Okay. So back then, because there were very limited options for tax-deferred growth, they were a very compelling option. Mm-hmm. But then in the 1970s, IRAs came about in 73. And now all of a sudden, individuals could start buying an investment account without an annuity and growing tax deferred. And you could move 401ks and other employer plans when you retired into them and manage it yourself or do other things with it. And the variable annuity started to lose a little bit of its potential luster because IRAs allowed for money to go in. Now, variable annuities never had and still never do have contribution limits, but what they don't allow is deductibility of contributions, which is what IRAs allowed. Variable annuities are always funded with after-tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a blend. You've got some of your own money in there that is basis, if you will, that's our tax has already been paid on it. It's the potential growth in there that gets the special tax treatment, unlike a traditional IRA where everything that goes in gets the special tax deferral treatment instead of just the earnings piece.
So now you start to see some competition of variable annuities, mm-hmm. but you also started to see a lot of the things we don't like about variable annuities come about. Complexity, bloatedness, and cost. Because the insurance company was imposing and still does impose a tremendous amount of expenses on the variable annuity. And when IRAs came out and then people were doing rollovers, and moving, now we're going from the 70s into the 80s and 90s. People were amassing in 401ks, Chris, which came out in 81, or in big time in 81. People were amassing hundreds of thousands of dollars in 401ks, moving them into IRAs when they retired. The variable annuity industry was suffering. Because who would want to open an account where you had to put after-tax dollars in? You would just try to max out your 401k or max out your IRA. Now, there could be times you inherit money from someone and you got a bunch of money and you don't want to pay taxes on it, where you may want or need to buy another account for some tax deferral, and variable annuities were trying to suck up that dollars, but they were sitting there eyeing these IRA accounts saying, wow, that's where the real money is.
Yep.
We got to get people to buy these accounts. And the insurance agents pushing them started putting a lot of people inside an IRA who already enjoy tax-deferred growth, were pushing them into a variable annuity. Obviously, owning a tax-deferred vehicle, a variable annuity, inside an already tax-deferred account kind of defeats the purpose. But they were pushing the annuitization ability of these accounts. Oh, you can buy this annuity from us, and you could annuitize it later into some guaranteed income. Well, you didn't need to buy a variable annuity for that. You could just keep the money in the IRA and then buy a single premium immediate annuity. But that said, they started really pushing the sale of variable annuities inside an IRA. And that started to get the attention of regulators, because these variable annuities were being laden with fees. You had the sub-accounts, the actual investments inside the variable annuity folks, that even though they had similar names to retail mutual funds, had fee structures far higher. And that the insurance companies were actually sharing, it's called revenue sharing, were sharing in a lot of the fee structure. So you were opening a variable annuity, being told, here are your investment choices. And even though you were being told in the prospectus that no one ever read because they were 80, 90, 100 pages in 8, 9, 10 point font, no one read that money in these separate accounts, some were going to insurance companies, some were going to the asset managers.
So there were legal kickbacks, if you will. That's how I refer to
they
revenue
are legal.
Sharing.
They revenue legal. Share was legal, it and if it was quote-unquote disclosed, but disclosure was a prospectus that no one ever read.
Right.
So when you started to see what the insurance companies were doing, and the insurance companies have only themselves to blame, they started getting sucked into the profitability of these. So the insurance company would make money by you putting money in and the sub-accounts were being invested. They were getting revenue sharing from that. They also were getting their own direct fee when you purchased the variable annuity. Some came with front-end commissions that you had to pay if you bought them. Others didn't. Some or all came with what is known as the M&E fee. And the M&E fee are the expenses of the annuity. It's called the mortality and expense fee. Most variable annuities today, that fee is around 1.5% to 2%. And that fee goes to the insurance company as well directly. That is shown to you directly. And then there's the revenue sharing fee that you never saw on the sub-accounts. And then many variable annuities had account maintenance fees, Chris, if the account balance dropped below a certain level. So you started to see all these fees being layered on to the variable annuity. And because the insurance company was making so much with front-end commissions or M&E fees, they started paying the brokers a tremendous amount of money to sell them. Far more than the broker would earn just selling a regular investment account. And because you needed to be a broker and an insurance agent, you started to see a lot of insurance agents get their broker's license and really start pushing these products. And I would say the 80s and 90s, especially the 90s, these products were pushed to high heaven. Yep. The regulators were far behind the eight ball on this, and people were being saddled with total expenses, initial commissions, M&E fees, death benefit fees. They would push this death benefit that if you died and the annuity was worth less than what you put in, you would be guaranteed at least what you put in. But you paid a fee for that. And then you paid the revenue sharing fee inside the investment options. And brokers were making a killing off of these, or insurance agents slash brokers were making a killing off of them. Mm-hmm. And they started pushing them where the real money was, inside IRAs.
Yep.
So now the regulators woke up to this and were starting to say, wait a minute. If your annuity is offering really nothing more than the potential for someone to annuitize, there's real no benefit to your variable annuity. They shouldn't be in your variable annuity. They should just be in investments without all these fees. And then if they need the income, they could buy a single premium immediate annuity and they would avoid all these fees you guys are imposing. And the regulators started looking at this. And lo and behold, living benefits started coming out right around the same time. That started to intrigue me. Only because the initial, not the initial ones, but the real heyday around 2002 through 2008, mm-hmm. these living benefits got so generous, it was worth what you paid in fees to buy it.
Right.
In full disclosure, folks, I have a variable annuity in my Roth IRA.
In his very own Roth IRA.
My very own Roth mm-hmm. IRA. I'm not going to tell you the company. I'm not going to tell you the annuity because the company's still around. It's an A-plus rated company. The annuity went the way of the dodo bird shortly after I bought it because the living benefit was just crazy.
Outrageous, right?
And then the market crashed in 08 and the insurance companies were saying, holy moly, we're on the hook for this.
Yeah, exactly.
Even I, when I crunched the numbers and saw what they were going to give me in guaranteed income, I thought, I'm foolish not to buy this. It was nuts. And that was the dawn of what is called living benefits. It gave the insurance agent slash brokers cover to explain why they were recommending a variable annuity inside an IRA. Certainly wasn't for the broker's commission and all that other stuff.
That's all a disadvantage to people.
It was this income benefit. And mm-hmm. to this day, it's still the main reason these annuities are sold. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying it's for better or worse. I'm not saying I am innocent of this. I have several clients, probably about a dozen or less, who also bought these variable annuities through me when these living benefits were around. If it was good enough for me, I felt it was good enough for my clients. And I told my clients to look at it the same way. Don't look at the investment account. It's not going to grow. Look at the income guarantee.
Actually, that's the story we tell people where we say, assume this is going to go to zero.
I want it to.
Right? Assume that the actual principal inside
goes
this
away.
Thing goes away. Don't plan on it at all. Assume it's going to disappear. We want you to focus solely on the income benefit
guarantee.
That they're going to get from this particular
thing. The income
thing.
Guarantee. Mm-hmm. So,
but these are... This is kind of Dreamville because we're dreaming of the day when these things were so attractive that it seemed to make sense. Those days are long gone.
And that's why I haven't used a variable annuity in this practice since 2009, 2010, somewhere.
Yeah, it was right after
there.
The
right after the
crash.
Fall of 08.
Yeah.
The 08 crash turned the VA business upside down with these outrageous living benefits. So what is a living benefit? It is a benefit to your annuity that's added that will allow you to turn on the income benefit. Because remember, folks, we said a variable annuity is nothing more than a deferred income benefit. You are going to, or deferred annuity. Mm-hmm. You're going to open an annuity. The account balance is going to grow or drop in the case of a variable mm-hmm. annuity. And then you are going to, quote unquote, annuitize it in the future, which means you give up access to all the money. The money is gone. Since few people ever did that, the regulators were questioning why this should be around inside IRAs. If you're putting a tax-deferred account into another tax-deferred account. So they came out what is known as a living benefit. This is an optional rider for, you guessed it, folks, an additional fee on top of the annuity. And this rider will generate an income guarantee that essentially allows you to withdraw a certain amount of money from your annuity. That's why it's called a withdrawal benefit, GMWB, guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit. And as long as you withdraw what they tell you to withdraw, and it's all contractually guaranteed and laid out to you, if you live long enough and withdraw all your money out of the annuity, the insurance company will continue to pay you your last income benefit for the rest of your life. Now, newer annuities, it's some of them aren't your last payment anymore. It's a different amount, and they get very complex. But basically speaking, that's how a withdrawal benefit works. We call them living benefits in the industry because it's not a benefit that requires annuitization. You get to withdraw money while you're living. It doesn't wait for the death benefit when you're dead to pay out. It's a living benefit. It's not a death benefit. Prior to living benefits, the really own advantage to owning a variable annuity in an IRA was the death benefit. So they were all being sold ostensibly for this magical death benefit. A living benefit allowed you to take money out of the annuity without annuitizing. Again, on paper, conceptually, it sounds wonderful. And there are some really good ones and some really bad ones. I own one. I like to think the one I bought, which went the way of the dodo bird in 2009, I like to think the one I bought is one of the good ones, since it was one of the first ones the insurance company got rid of when the market crashed, because they're on the hook for all the benefit they gave me. Anyways, that said, so the living benefit allows you to withdraw money, but the cynic in me says it also allows the insurance agent or stockbroker to justify owning this inside an IRA, mm-hmm. because you are creating an income stream. So your money goes into the variable annuity. It may grow, it may drop, but the income benefit is guaranteed, folks. And oftentimes nowadays, these annuities, Chris, are sold on that income benefit. You have to really understand how that income benefit works. That'll be another show. We'll talk about GMWBs and GMIBs, the two major forms of income benefits, which you'll see on variable annuities and its close kissing cousin, the fixed deferred annuity. Totally different animal, but also with those benefits. But the income benefit, Chris, just added a whole other layer of fees. And most of those income benefits have another fee, usually 0.5% to 1%, added to the M&E fee, which is usually 1.5% to 2%, added to the investment management fees of the subaccounts, usually 0.5% to 2%. You start adding all these fees up, I agree with Ken Fisher. I would hate annuities and so should you. The fees are just very high. And the newer, since 2011, 10, 11, and beyond, living benefits, to me, don't justify the fee at all.
Nope.
Now, I agree, I'm biased. I don't like these annuities anymore. I'm perfectly open with everyone here. But if you ask me, the living benefit cost for the income benefit they're giving you is not worth it.
Right, the seesaw of this, because there's periods when things like this are more attractive or less attractive. Right now, the seesaw is not in the purchaser of these products' favor, generally.
In our humble opinion.
In our opinion. And I have a similar, you know, my basic approach is that when you are buying a product or investing in something for purposes of your financial situation, if you can't understand it clearly, or specifically, if you couldn't explain it to a 10-year-old or to your grandmother,
I used to say an eighth grader.
It's a pretty high bar, or a pretty low bar, I guess. If you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough to be buying such a thing or investing in such a thing. It should not be so smoke and mirrors that you don't even understand what it is that you're buying or investing
and when
in
we do a
What it does for you and why you got it in the first place. There's
exactly.
Many people that own these things can't answer those simple questions.
And when we do a show on GMWBs and GMIBs, that will start to show a lot of the opaqueness of these fees.
Yeah, opaque is bad.
We'll explain that to you. So today, variable annuities, actually their sales folks had dropped significantly when the Department of Labor fiduciary rule was being bantered about. When the courts ruled, and I have to get, I feel the courts ruled correctly. Department of Labor had no legislative authority to regulate the way they did. Courts simply said, you got to get permission from Congress. And I believe Congress will address this, as is the SEC. But when the Department of Labor was trying to pass what was known as the fiduciary rule, variable annuity sales dropped off precipitously. When that rule went away, variable annuity sales have started to increase again. Uh-huh. I'm not saying all variable annuities are bad. There's an animal out there called IOVAs, investment-only variable annuities. They got no bells, no whistles. No death benefits, no income riders, and extremely low fees. So investment-only variable annuities, they went to less is more. They got rid of all the complexity. No M&E fees. The biggest provider, or the original provider, was Jefferson National, recently bought out by Nationwide. Charged $20 a month for an investment-only variable annuity. And they offered 300 in different sub-accounts inside there. Now, the sub-accounts, if you read the prospectuses, are doing revenue sharing. But the fees of the sub-accounts were very, very close to their kissing cousin mutual fund. Hmm. Very close. Mm-hmm. And if memory serves me correct, and don't quote me on this, there were even Vanguard indexed options, which were not sharing any revenue with Jefferson National, also available in. And Jefferson National would sell these annuities, not through brokers and insurance agents, because the person putting you in that gets paid nothing.
I was going to say, there's no nothing.
There is nothing.
There's nothing to share with them.
No, the investment person or the insurance agent opening this for you gets
these
paid
had to have been
nothing.
Created for fee-only or fee-based planners.
Fee-based and fee-only planners like us. Yep. So they would only be sold, obviously, because the person selling them doesn't get paid anything from Jefferson National. And they were used only, they had no benefit inside an IRA because they had no income benefit, no death benefit, no nothing. It was a place for people who came into a lot of money, but right now we're in a very high tax bracket, and that money was causing problems with the AMT or with interest, dividends, capital gains, rebalancing, which is a nightmare for higher net worth, higher taxed people. How are we going to rebalance this portfolio without mm-hmm. kicking off all these cap gains?
Yep.
IOVA, investment-only variable annuity. Because there's no limit on the amount of money you can put in by the IRS. You can rebalance within the annuity, tax deferred.
Yep.
And if you felt certain you were going to be in a lower tax bracket in retirement, it was worth or could be worth turning a capital taxed asset into an income taxed asset. Because all distributions from a VA, even though they are invested in sub-accounts, are not taxed as capital gains, and losses cannot be used as capital losses. It is viewed as income.
So when it comes out.
When it comes out. Mm-hmm. Your basis, your contribution comes out tax-free, but the growth is taxed as income. These variable annuities or all annuities no longer are on FIFO, first in, first out. That went the way of the dodo bird in 87. And now they're taxed as LIFO, last in, first out. The last money in a variable annuity is the growth of that variable annuity. So today you got to be very careful on these investment-only variable annuities. If you inherited $200,000 and you want to put $200,000 in, and you're not buying them through a broker, these have very low fees. They're a wonderful beast, but you have to understand what you're giving up and have to be certain when you start taking money out, you will be in a lower income tax bracket because the first dollars out are all that capital growth taxed to you as income. And that will always be higher than capital. Capital gains are always lower than income. If you're paying 12, I'm going to be in the 12% bracket, though, Jim, in retirement. Well, yeah. That's zero in capital gains.
Right.
But now you're going to have to pay 12% as income. If you're going to be in the 28% income tax bracket, you're going to be only in the 20% capital gains tax bracket. So that tax deferral is costing you higher income. Can't say, Chris, I'm a fan of the IOVA, investment-only variable annuity.
I'd say that's going to fall into, in my opinion, a niche product where there's going to be a very specific circumstance for an individual that might have an attraction to this. This is
right.
Not going to be a widely beneficial
Now, even
choice.
Though, let me throw out a huge caveat on these. You can see I'm not a fan of variable annuities much because I don't like the tax aspects. The fact that you're going to take a capital asset and turn it into income. And also no step up in basis at death, folks, on variable annuities. So you buy a VA, even these investment-only variable annuities, with very low fees. There are revenue sharing fees. If your agent tells you there aren't any, I don't think that agent read the prospectus closely. Most of the ones offered by insurance companies do have revenue sharing. That said, the other thing to watch out is at the death of the owner, if you put in $100,000 and you die 20 years later, it's worth $300,000. There's no step up in basis where beneficiaries will inherit it at $300,000 and can sell and go away with no taxes. The variable annuity will always, the growth will always, 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 always be subject to income tax when inherited by a human. Charities can get away from it, but humans cannot. Okay, let's look at the last aspect of a VA, which is one of their pros. And I know I've been very harsh on them, and I think justifiably so.
I don't know. I think this discussion has
been
pretty balanced.
Line.
Been pretty balanced.
And admit that I used them at a point mm-hmm. in time.
And also admit that, in general, we are not attracted to them.
Anymore,
right.
I hated them at first. Then I liked them for mm-hmm. that brief period of time.
Right, there was a window there.
Yeah. Literally. Just one annuity company would come out with something. 6 months later,
somebody
another would.
Some, hey, look
something
at ours.
Better. Ours is better. Yeah. Ours is better. Back and forth. Those benefits, those living benefit income riders got so ridiculous, even I decided to buy one. And it wasn't too long after I bought mine, the market crashed. That insurance company doesn't even offer my annuity. It was the first one, one of the first ones they closed.
But they still
I can't even
honor
put
yours
money.
Because
no, I can't
you
put
can't
more
put more money
in,
but it's they, honored at its current yeah, status.
They shut that door down. They said, Jim, no more money. We're going to honor what you have. But that said, let's look at some things. We talked about some of the tax issues, the tax aspects, the pros, the cons, what a variable annuity is. There's one other thing is how does it work at the insurance company level? And from this standpoint, I got to give the kudos to the variable annuity. But it's not enough of a kudos to make me like them. When you open a variable annuity, your money is not part of the insurance company's general assets. So if the insurance company went out of business, If the insurance company holding my Roth IRA went out of business, I would lose my income benefit. Mm-hmm. That is not guaranteed. It is the income benefit is based on the claims paying ability of the insurance right. company. I'm exactly. sure you've heard that. But my money is maintained in a separate account away from the insurance company's assets.
And away from their creditors.
And away from their creditors. Mm-hmm. And is mine and will be paid out to me. When you buy a fixed annuity, the annuities Chris and I like, your money becomes part of the general account at the insurance company. And that means if the insurance company ran into problems and declared bankruptcy, my account is frozen. It's not lost, folks. It's frozen because my money, my claim, is now part of the general account of the insurance company, and I become a creditor. Saying the insurance company owes me, let's say I put $100,000 in, they owe me $100,000. The bankruptcy court's going to say, get in line, Mr. Saulnier. You're just a general creditor. We have your claim for $100,000. If at the end, which could take years, it was found I was going to be paid 95 cents on the dollar, I would get my $95,000. But I'm stuck in limbo while this is being adjudicated. So states have stepped in because of this and set up what they call the guarantee fund. And all insurance companies that want to operate in a state selling any line of insurance, and remember we said, Chris, an annuity is insurance, they have to pay into the guarantee fund. So the state would step in and protect a certain amount of my basis, not my growth. The growth is based on the claims paying ability of the insurance company. But my basis on a fixed annuity is protected up to $250,000. And most states mimic what Colorado does, $250,000. So if I'm only going to receive $95,000 back, my $5,000 is easily covered that is owed to me.
By the state fund.
By the state fund. Mm-hmm. The problem is a lot of this takes a long time.
Right, exactly. Hopefully now, this happens early.
Right. Yeah. So my point with this, I think it's a red herring. Because if you buy a good fixed annuity from an A-plus or double A-plus or A-plus-plus rated company, the chances of that company going under are not that great. It's not impossible, but I think it's over.
Very, very small.
It's over pushed by variable annuity sellers. Oh, you right. don't want to buy.
Because it'll mix in with their. Yeah, they're making correct. The argument there's a huge advantage to having these separate accounts that are owned by the policyholders rather than it being mixed in the general fund. And if you're buying a fixed annuity product from a low, low rated insurance company, I would worry. I would worry. If it depends on what your intent is. If your intent is to roll the dice and hopefully that big old income promise that they've made to you comes true, they survive, that's one approach. But if you're looking for the main reason why people look for these annuity products, which is safety and a promise from a substantially backed source, you're going to look for a highly rated company to buy these things from.
Absolutely.
So you can count on, the whole point is you can count on this income coming to you in the agreed upon amount from the contract.
Exactly. And it's also this structure that makes fixed annuities so much lower cost than variable annuities. Follow my math here, folks, mm-hmm. and you'll understand. This is the yep. last thing I'm going to talk about. So when you open up a variable annuity, your money is your money. It is put in a separate account by the insurance company. It is not part of their assets. However, when you invest in that, remember, you are giving them part of the revenue. The investment company is going to charge you. They got to pay. This is what makes me always laugh, Chris, on variable annuities, on the investment options. Except on those investment-only VAs that own a couple of indexing options that don't revenue share, a lot of the investment options inside those annuities, Chris, are the ones willing to pay the most in the insurance company. The insurance company's not doing any fiduciary due diligence on those products and making sure that they have the very best large cap growth offering. It's just, oh, you guys are willing to give us X amount and you're only willing to give us Y? Okay, we'll go with you.
Right.
Okay, back to my fee comparison here. So a lot of variable annuities are sold under a false fear, or they try to get you to fear buying a fixed annuity because the variable annuity salesman will say, well, did you know your money is part of the general account of the insurance company? If they go out of business, you can lose your money. They're not going to talk about you become a creditor, you're going to get paid something, and then the state guarantee fund makes up the difference. They're going to forget to mention that. They're going to say, but my variable annuity over here stands alone. But because the insurance company doesn't have access to your money, the only money they're making off of your money is the little bit of revenue sharing. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to take your money and do what insurance companies do best. Do you know what that is? Buy bonds.
Hedge invest for long periods of time.
Yeah. Buy bonds. Mm-hmm. Insurance companies are the biggest buyers of bonds in the world, are owned by insurance companies. So they can't get your money and go out and buy bonds. They got to get a little bit of revenue sharing. So what do? They put that M&E fee in there. 1, 1.5, 1.25, 2% M&E fee. They put rider fee, account maintenance fees. They've got to start charging you fees because they're not getting your money. When you buy a fixed annuity, we have said on this show, the cost of a MYGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity, paying a certain amount of money to you every year, contractual guarantee, the cost is what?
Zero. Technically. Zero up front.
Technically
effectively,
zero.
Effectively, what they're doing is taking your money, agreeing to pay you a certain amount, but on the other hand, investing that money you've given to them at a rate a little bit higher than what they're effectively paying to you, and they keep the difference.
In the industry, that's called yield spread.
Yeah, it's the spread.
And it's no different than what a bank does.
No, it's exactly the same thing.
And that's what I tell my clients, especially the ones who come in and say, oh, no, Jim, I read Ken Fisher. He hates annuities, and so should you. And they say, I'm not going to buy this MYGA because there's a lot of fees. And I tell them, there's no cost. And they say, excuse me? And I tell them, there's no cost. It's no different than bank CDs, minus the FDIC insurance. Hence, they pay more. They have to pay more. An insurance company's MYGA has got to pay more than a CD, or I wouldn't tell you to buy one.
Exactly.
FDIC-insured CD is paying more than a MYGA. Go buy the FDIC-insured CD. But there are no costs because the insurance company has all your money as part of their general account. And they can go out and buy bonds. When you buy a bond, folks, especially at the rates, we're not talking they go out and buy a $10,000. You put $10,000 in a fixed annuity, they're not buying a little $10,000 bond from their local Edward Jones broker. The insurance company is pooling that, and they have hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, and they're doing the direct lending to the companies. Mm-hmm. They are right up there, and they're right. Saying, look, we got the money you
rates.
Want.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're doing. And because of that, they don't have any cost. There's no M&E cost. There's very few. I've seen some, but very few even put an account cost, and I would avoid them. I wouldn't buy one. Fixed annuities have no cost. They make their money off of the yield spread. Variable annuities have so much high cost because the insurance company doesn't have access to your money. So insurance brokers are using the very thing that keeps fixed annuity costs so low, pooling. They try to use that as a reason not to buy it, and they try to use the very thing that caused variable annuity fees to be so high. The insurance company has no access to it, so they got to nickel and dime you everywhere as a reason to buy it. So I'd be very careful on any broker who's saying, oh, well, this one's a separate account and this one's a general account.
I mean, it is a fact.
It is a fact.
But it's not necessarily an advantage.
Bad, right. Right, exactly. I don't think it's a bad fact.
No.
The fact that the insurance company on the fixed side can put so much money together and pool it into hundreds of millions of dollars or more allows them to get amazing pricing, Chris, on their bonds. And allows them through the yield spread to say, hey, they got to compete against each other. So if they the better pricing they can get, the higher interest they can give you, the more money they get. So there's a lot of competition. But now you understand, folks, why variable annuities have such high costs. And the investment-only variable annuities that stripped out all of that, and that's why Jefferson National and now Nationwide, and there's many others. They were just the original. Nationwide bought Jefferson National last year or the year before. They made their money off the $20 a month. And they don't pay anything, Chris, to the investment advisors selling them. So one final caveat, though, I forgot to mention on the investment-only variable annuities. You generally buy them through an investment advisor representative or a registered investment advisor. I'm both of them. I don't use those annuities. Not that I have anything against them. I never found a client where it was appropriate for. Mm-hmm. If I ever found a client who wanted a variable annuity, I would put them in one of those.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the investment advisor can levy his own fee on that annuity and start withdrawing a management fee for assets. Don't do it. If your investment advisor wants to start charging you to manage your annuity, tell them no. Just say no. You're going to open this for me, but you're not going to charge me one damn red cent. You only have a few investments to choose from. I don't need this managed. I just want to buy and hold and avoid taxes. So be very careful on that. A lot of investment advisors love that AUM, assets under management. And because an investment advisor cannot sell a traditional variable annuity because it pays a commission and they want to be quote unquote fee only, they want to put you in an investment only variable annuity, which doesn't pay them anything. So they're going to charge a management fee. Now, if your investment advisor is going to charge a reasonable fee, 1/10, 2/10, 3/10 of a percent.
Or maybe an upfront fee to handle opening it.
An opening fee.
That would be palatable.
I would agree with that because I would. If I was doing this, I wouldn't charge a yearly fee or a monthly fee. But I'd say, hey, this is going to take my staff. Annuities are a pain in the ass to open, folks. It's going to take my staff a couple hours. We want $220 an hour, so pay me $440, I'll get this open for you.
One time.
Mm-hmm. So I can get it open. Because you can't buy it on your own. You got to go through an agent. But I just feel, Chris, charging to manage assets in an account with very limited choices.
That you really can't manage. Right. Yeah, exactly.
I think is overrated. So you do have to be careful on those investment-only variable annuities if they're throwing an investment management fee on. Because now you have to look at the broker annuity and all their fees. Is that going to be better than an annual ongoing 1.5%, 1.25% asset management fee? So I hope I was down the middle, tried to explain how these work. This was a very 101. If you are a industry person, I know I missed and glossed over a lot of things on these riders and GMIBs and GMWBs. We did that on purpose. We'd still be recording. This would be an 18-hour show. We'll get into variable annuities 201 next, and we'll start delving a little deeper. But I think we did a pretty good 30,000-foot view of variable annuities.
Yeah, a little historical perspective on it, kind of how things have evolved over time. I think this turned out pretty well. I was a little nervous when we talked about doing the topic that, this thing can get, just because this area of annuities is very complicated and confusing and choices, lots of choices and variations from company to company, product to product and stuff. So it can get a little messy.
That'll be in 201, 301, 401. But I am so pithy.
You just knocked this out in just a few minutes.
Yeah. How long did it take?
Well, we're at 1 hour and 3 minutes at this point.
Hey, I stopped at my hour.
I applaud you.
Thank you. Do we have that?
Sure, I'll give you a little applause.
Thank you very much. Nice. Okay,
so,
folks.
Go ahead.
No, do a summary ending of who we are, how they can reach us. And
well,
let's
no, you
end
do that.
Show.
I have another thing I have to say.
Oh, that's right. Because we are regulated under the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, Chris must read you this amazing disclosure.
Yes. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.
That is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority's. We have to read that. For years, longtime podcast listeners will know. This goes back 5, 6, 7 years ago now. Chris and I were not allowed to say the word variable annuity.
Or mutual fund.
Or mutual fund. We used to say...
Well, we could say it. The cost and pain and suffering we would endure from saying such things,
right, by the
was
regulators.
Immense.
Immense. So we used to say an annuity whose return varies with that of the market... That was my idea of variable annuity. And mutual fund was a diversified investment option. Mutual, and then I would throw in, because FINRA wanted me to call a mutual fund a diversified investment option. Mm-hmm. I cannot say mutual fund. So me being the cynic or wise ass that I can sometimes be, I would say it is a diversified investment option mutually shared amongst a wide variety of people.
Very nice. I'm glad we don't have to speak
just like
in
the
code
regulators who
anymore.
Still don't want us to talk about the annuity only available to those over the age of 62.
No, the mortgage only available to those over the age of 62.
Oh, the mortgage only available to those over the age of 62 who...
Whose name shall remain nameless.
Remain nameless, but thanks to Professor Wade Fowle has caused many in the industry to reverse their line of thought on those mortgages. But anyway, we can't
topic
say that
for
word.
Another day.
Another word. But... FINRA, much to their defense, realized that's a real stupid rule we have. So they said we can now say the word mutual fund and variable annuity as long as Chris, not Chris personally, but someone reads that disclosure. So there is the disclosure to satisfy our compliance people. And why don't you say a little bit about us and let's wrap up this show.
Well, as a reminder, Jim and I are both practicing financial planners, professional financial planners
in the state of Colorado.
In the state of Colorado, northern Colorado specifically, but we work with clients from all over the country, do this fabulous invention called the internet, and prior to that, the telephone, which still works in our office, actually. So if you'd like some advice or some help with your retirement situation, you can contact us. The best way is go to our website. JimHelps.com is the short version of the website URL. So JimHelps.com. On there, you'll find a contact form. You can send us questions or just reach out to us that way. Or you can even, if you want to just jump to the next step, you can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, where you can get on the phone with one of us and chat with us about what we might be able to help you with, what your retirement situation is, what your questions are. And if we can help you, we'll be glad to set up some type of situation with you. If we can't help you, we'll explain why we may not be a good fit and hopefully direct you to somewhere who can help you with what your needs might be. Again, we can help folks throughout the country. So don't
I do want to point out, though, to all our naysayer do-it-yourselfers, because 99% of you are, who else is going to be listening to the Retirement and IRA show? We do all this by charging you a fee. You don't have to have us manage your assets. We don't even care about managing your assets. Some people have us manage their assets because they like our service.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. Keep your own assets. Do it yourself. You're a do-it-yourselfer. You just need a second opinion. And that's where my firm comes in.
Perfect. So thanks for joining us again this week. We'll be back with you next week with an undisclosed topic, but I'm sure it'll be compelling. So we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.